The future of UNLV basketball is as bright as the lights of Las Vegas. We will work tirelessly to recruit elite student athletes who are equally committed to earning their degrees, who are young men of character, passionate about pushing themselves beyond their dreams, and just as passionate about representing UNLV in the classroom and in the community.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
That was the new head basketball coach of the UNLV Running Rebels, T.J. Otzelberger, on Wednesday at the press conference that was heard on our sister station, ESPN, 1198.
Wow. You know what? We're calling it ESPN Las Vegas these days.
Okay.
But it's, it's the FM, 100.9 FM. And 1100 AM. There you go.
Did I almost trip you up as well on that?
Yeah.
We're on 98.9 FM.
Yes, sir.
Wow. All right. So there will no longer be a Heatwave Sports Show after tonight because of that.
That's how you know Tim's been in the building a very long time.
Yes. Yes. Anyways, TJ Otzelberger, the new man at UNLV. And we're going to talk about the hiring first, and then we'll get into what I feel was a complete debacle on the head coach search. But let's talk to Tom Barton, because Tom, being in the East Coast and as I've known you almost close to over a decade now, I respect the little things you know about certain schools, and especially with social media today and Twitter, everybody is a damn expert when it talks about whatever, right? So as the rumors came out that the decision was made that it was going to be TJ Otzelberger, and this was, I'm talking about Tuesday, as the hiring was announced on Wednesday, all of a sudden you had people going absolutely crazy about who this guy was, and then there's the so-called experts that knew everything about the guy. Unless you're a South Dakota State Jackrabbit fan or followed the Summit Conference, Tommy, most people didn't know who this guy was coming into to Wednesday's announcement. Tom, what did you know about TJ Otzelberger? And number two, how do you feel about this hiring?
What I knew is that when Lorenzo Lomar brought him onto staff at Washington, people were losing their minds because how good he was. How good he was coming from Iowa State. How he took Iowa State and he recruited at that school and he brought them up. That's what I knew about him. South Dakota State, guys, this wasn't his like first job. And the people that I was listening to, and not specifically on radio, I'm just talking about, you know, watching social media, that were ripping him apart before the hire as it was coming down, I was chuckling that all they mentioned was South Dakota, as if that was literally his first job in basketball. And I'm going, well, you know, when he got hired for the Washington Huskies assistant job, that's when I recognized the name, because as you know what I mean, I follow Washington. I recognize the name. I recognize the name because people were raving about him, about how he was the bright young mind in college. He was the next guy. He was one of the best assistants that you could have. I remember the fanfare for the hiring of this assistant coach. Nobody mentioned that, Tim. Not one Las Vegas writer, not one Las Vegas radio host. On their social media that I follow, not one of them mentioned how great of a job he did at Washington, how he walked into that job with immense, immense fanfare. Nobody mentioned how he did at Iowa State. Nobody said anything. It was as if this man woke up, went from, junior varsity at some high school somewhere, took the South Dakota State job, and all of a sudden this is all he did. And it baffled me that people are actually paid in this town to speak intelligently about a man that they had no idea about.
And it exactly right. So he went 70-33 in three seasons with South Dakota State. He went to an NCAA tournament 2 years ago. This year, pretty much wire to wire, won the conference and then got knocked out in the first round, which people we know were using as an indictment of what a terrible coach he was supposed to be. And if it wasn't for his star player in Mike Dom, who I would like your thoughts on as well as far as a possible NBA future, that they wouldn't be anything to talk about, which are all, it's almost to me, it's like you're grasping at straws to find a reason not to like him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the problem with this is that it's not necessarily that they don't like him. It's that they had already made their mind up that Miller was going to be the coach. And that was it. You were not going to change their minds that Miller, who was completely unqualified for the job, was the coach. This is a town that I've told you for years thinks of themselves in a basketball way that they're important and they're not. This is a town that has been fed by the local media, Patino, for 5 years, right? Patino for 5 years. Then there was horrible, horrible information that Thad Mata was coming. I told you guys he was never coming. I told you that. Oh, everybody had information. Thad Mata was never coming here, ever. It was a horrible job of journalism to even bring that name up. I think it was a horrible job of journalism to bring Patino up for the last couple of years, okay? So, yes, this is where the standard has reached. It reached the point. So when TJ gets hired, and the hire is a guy that doesn't have a lot of fanfare, and you have your sights on Thad Mata, who everybody knows, whether he's good for the job or not, everybody knows. You have your sights on maybe Musselman, who everybody knows, maybe not good for the job, but everybody knows. And Patino, those are your three candidates that are being thrown around. And then everyone settles on, okay, fine, we're not getting Patino, we're not going to get Thad Mata, we'll take Miller. And the players love Miller because the players, who won like five games last year, are important, apparently, in their opinion. But the players love Miller. So you built this up, and this is the media that did it. The media built this program up to be an elite player. You started us off by saying my East Coast, you know, mentality on this, and how did we react? That's right. A small school coach that succeeded at a small school went to a small school.
Yeah.
A bad conference coach went to a bad conference. He'll probably have some success there. That was the general feel. Why? UNLV is still living on the fact that they won a championship in the early 90s, okay? But on the national landscape, they're nowhere. They're not a speck. So to go from the Summit League to Mountain West, it's about right. It would have shocked everybody that is intelligent about college basketball if Patino or Thad Mata actually did go there. Because why would they tarnish their career going to a place that has not shown the ability to win? It's not just one coach. It's gone through multiple coaches. It has been a coaching nightmare. The media plays a large role in all of this. If I believe, and I'll save my opinion on today for after a couple of minutes here, but I believe that if we had not heard about Patino and we had not heard about Thad Mata and we had not settled on Miller, I believe TJ would have gotten hired. People would have said, okay, that's a fine move. You know, not the big fanfare, but we can live with it. But because the media pumped up unattainable and bad fit player people, every week it was guaranteed this guy's coming here. It's just a terrible job of journalism. And the reality is that journalism has been dead for a while, but a lot of the journalism that is coming across now, and especially speaking journalism in radio and television, it is just a horrible job to even bring up some of these guys' names.
And before I jump into how I felt that UNLV handled the head coaching search, I had a friend ask me, a friend I went to high school with actually hit me up on Twitter, Tom, and he said, how do you feel about the new head coach? And I was honest. I said, you know, I know what everybody else knows. I don't know him well enough to say how I think this is going to work out. I didn't follow South Dakota State other than I knew that they were the best team in the Summit League. I didn't know South Dakota State other than I knew who Mike Dom was, right? Otzelberger, as I did the research, and you happen to know, being a Washington Huskies fan, that there is some back history on him being a good recruiter, not only at Washington but at Iowa State as well. But I told him, I said, his name's Brian. I said, you know what, Brian? if T.J. Otzelberger leaves this school in 3 years to go to a Power 5 conference, he did a good job. And he said, what are you talking about? Why would he do that? I said, because this is an audition for him to get a better job. This is not where he's going to be. And I truly feel that because that's what we've – you just said it, Tom. That's what we've downgraded ourselves to. We went from being a top 10 perennial school in the 90s to a top 25 school in the 2000s to being an afterthought in college basketball world anymore other than, oh, yeah, I remember UNLV. That's what we are now. So if T.J. Otzelberger, and if he's listening, you know, I'm not trying to sell him to the next person that wants to buy him, but if he's gone in 3 to 4 years, Tom, he did his job.
And I think he will be. I do. I think he's going to have some success here. And here's the only concern that I have. I told you that UNLV kind of falls in love with recruiters. Dave Rice was a good recruiter. You can't take it away from him. Dave Rice recruited well here. Okay, Marvin Mendes recruited well here. They didn't perform. So TJ's biggest thing, his biggest mark, is that he's a good recruiter. But he generally recruited from the big from the Midwest, okay, which is a different recruiting. But this is when you're in a bubble, like most Las Vegas fans are. You're in this bubble. It's hard to look outside the bubble. So I'm going to take it from TJ's perspective. On my resume, what do I have? I have took you know a smaller Iowa State team and built them up, right? Okay. So he can build up a program with that is a bad school but in a good conference. Okay, check. Here's what he can do. He could coach that way. I went to Washington when they were good, you know, to a Power 5 conference. I was able to take an assistant job to show my recruiting strength. Here you go. Check. Now I was able to turn around, go back to a small school, propel them up, and show I could get some of the best players in the country, show off my recruiting skills, even at a bad school. Check. What's left before I get a big, giant job? Go to a program that's down, that you have the facilities and the resources to actually get really good recruits, recruit well there, and win there, and now a big school will scoop you up. And that's what UNLV is. It's a stepping stone. This is not, and it, you know, to rip apart UNLV, there's a lot of stepping stones in the country right now, okay? Most schools in the country are a stepping stone, but UNLV is a stepping stone. I think TJ recruits well. I think he does well there. I've seen people say, you know, he's worse than Menzies, and they shouldn't have moved on from Menzies. I'll tell you the truth. Listen, that's something that I said. If you're going to make a lateral move, you know, do I think this is a lateral move? Maybe. It might be. I'm not sold on TJ coming here and having massive success. But again, I go back to ask the question that I ask every single UNLV fan about basketball and football. What is your definition of success? If you are looking at TJ coming here next year, getting into an NCAA tournament, that's ridiculous. You're not going to have that. If you are looking at TJ coming here and winning the conference next year, it's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. If you say in 3 years, I want to be in an NCAA tournament, yeah, maybe. Maybe he could do that. And here's the problem, though. You give Marvin Menzies another 3 years, maybe I could see him making a tournament. So I think it's a little bit of a lateral move. I think he is better. I think the fans will relate to TJ better. They're going to like him in time. I just don't believe that he's the guy to take UNLV back to a Final Four. And he's going to be here because, like you said, I think he gets scooped up. If he starts to do well, he's going to get scooped up.
Yeah. And we all know, I believe that his buyout, look, if it's a Power 5 school, it doesn't matter. The money's there. But I believe in this buyout, other than Chris Beard's, who I think was $1 million, which, Tom, you know as well as I do, in college athletics isn't anything. I believe it's a little bit higher here for TJ. But I'm with you on that. And that was my point that I made to him, my friend, and he's like, You want the program to succeed. You just can't keep changing coaches. And I said, look, this is an indictment on Rebel fans, on boosters, on people on the Board of Regents, on administration in the not only the athletic department but the school itself. This is all an indictment of what you guys created under 10 years ago when you bitched and moaned about Lon Kruger. Getting to a Sweet 16, getting to the tournament every year wasn't good enough. And you ran him out of town by not choosing to retain him by giving him a little raise. You started this. Next was Dave Rice. Right, Tom? Hell of a recruiter, hell of a nice guy. Some of the best interviews I ever had with Las Vegas local franchises or team coaches. Dave Rice, he answered every question. Nice guy. You ran his ass out of town because getting to the tournament wasn't good enough for you. And what you did was, and whether this was the AD's fault at the time, Tina Kunzer-Murphy, was that she made an idiotic move by firing him in the middle of the season, which in turn caused the Marvin Menzies hire and his lack of recruiting that first season. We all talked about that. Well, guess what? Now you're moving on to T.J. Otzelberger because Menzies couldn't cut the mustard either, Tommy. And look at the progression of this. Lon Kruger, Dave Rice, Marvin Menzies, now you got T.J. This is all an indictment on Rebel fans, administration, boosters, everybody. You guys created this mess you're in, and this is the results of it now. So for him to be gone in 3 or 4 years, like I said, I stand by this. You want that to happen because that meant he came here and got you back to somewhat of relevancy, whether that be just making the tournament.
So let's put it out there. And we did it with Menzies. Okay, we did it with Sanchez. Let's put it out there today, okay, because this changes so much. The talking heads in this town will change their opinion 15 times and tell you they always had it right, right? So let's put it out there today. What is the goal? What is the 3-year goal and the 5-year goal that is a attainable goal for you to say that TJ did an okay job?
I say if he's in the tournament within 3 to 4 years, that's okay for me.
5 years, what's the goal?
Sweet 16.
Oof. Okay. And I am way, way, way lower than that.
And let me say, the reason why I say that is that based on the research that I did after the fact, is you brought it up at the beginning of this segment, was that the guy can, obviously he has some recruiting ties somewhere. He has talent in doing that. I think this year, what he brings back, if he gets some of these guys to stay, that mix with whatever he can do here in this short recruiting process, maybe the team, especially if they're going to supposedly, Tom, and I use that in quotes because we've heard this before, play an upper tempo style of basketball that may work out with the talent that he has, that the Mountain West is, look, it's not a good conference again coming back next year. I can already tell. Just getting back into, you know, what are you talking about win-wise? I don't know because I don't know what his team's going to look like yet. So the first year I don't even really look at because it's not fair to him right now until we see what he has coming back and what he can bring in. But by year three, if he's that good of a recruiter, Tom, I think he can get it done in that conference. And, yeah, I know my year five expectation is hefty, but if he's still here in 5 years, he should be progressing through the tournament at least past the round of 64 into the round of 32. In that 4-year mark,
I think in 3 years, yeah, he's. I think to say that he did a good job is 3 years of the tournament. You get into the tournament. I think in 5 years you win a round of the tournament. Mm-hmm. I believe that UNLV is so far down that the Sweet 16 is just too lofty of a goal. What do I think he's going to do? I think year three, He'll be fighting for a tournament spot. I don't know if they make it. It might be like a Utah State kind of situation that, you know, where they're not the best team in the tournament, but they win a couple of games. That they get that second bid in the Mountain West. I don't think he's going to come in here. Now it depends on what Musselman does, of course. But I don't think he's going to come in here and rip the title away from Nevada. All of a sudden, I just don't see that happening in the next 3 years. I think UNLV. You could be optimistic, but you have to be realists here. You know, 20 wins next year. I don't know what kind of team he's going to have coming back. This could be another throwaway year. And if this is a throwaway year, that Tim, then you know, year two would be all right. Compete for a second or a third place finish. Year three, and then you're a year off. You know, now you're going into year four where it's a tournament. I think asking for a Sweet 16 in 5 years is something every UNLV fan wants, but I think it's an unattainable goal.
Can I be the optimist and say if he could catch lightning in this bottle, Tom, because of the past, because of the city, because of the recruiting techniques that are built into this city, because of his recruiting background, that if he catches lightning in a bottle, and I'm not, obviously I'm not saying we're going to harken back to the days of running Rebel Glory, but look, if he gets 23, 25, 26 wins here by year three into the tournament, is it enough to keep him here? They're going to have, and this will be part of my big statement after the break, it's going to be up to the university to pony up and pay the man what he deserves at that point.
Yeah, I'll tell you, and this is one of the most anticipated things. You told me you had a big, take on this. You told me you wanted to give me credit on something I said. I'm sitting around. I don't know, guys. We didn't talk about it. I'm sitting around waiting because all I've heard is negativity coming from most of the media about this hire, and you seem to be on the other side.
I like the hire and the fact that I like what I'm seeing now. When the rumors came out, look, I didn't play into the rumor game, Tommy. We went over this for months. We went over this before the man even lost his job in Marvin Menzies, which is very unfair to the guy. But look, the writing was on the wall at some point.
I'll be honest with you. I'll be the first one to say I was completely wrong. I thought there was no way Menzies would be out of town.
Yeah.
Unless they went out and got a big guy. They didn't do that. They didn't do it.
Let's take the time out. When we come back, we'll talk about the UNLV head coaching process and where I felt Athletic Director Reed let down a lot of Rebel fans when it came to what happened here with TJ Otzelberger coming to UNLV. Tommy, I will give you credit. It'll be in the NBA segment, though. Coming up after the UNLV segment. Either way, we're going to talk about this process on the other side of the timeout, get Tim and Tom's thoughts on where UNLV failed the UNLV fan base. It's Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.
Look up Heatwave Sports on Facebook and on Twitter at HW Sports and at Tom Barton Sports. Now back to Heatwave Sports. Here's Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
We are halfway through a Super Sunday night. Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio. Quick programming note. Yes, we are bumped again next Saturday due to the VGK LA Kings game in Los Angeles. So no show Saturday. Back at it Sunday for your usual three-hour affair. And we're talking UNLV basketball. TJ Otzelberger, the new head coach for the Running Rebels. But Tom, I want to talk about what I felt was a disservice to the UNLV fans and how the media helped create what we just went through in the hiring process. And I'll be honest, because that's what we do on this show. We're honest about things. We have no ties to the university. We have no ties to anybody that has... We don't have to portray a certain spin on what happened here, and I felt that it was a debacle number two. Like I said at the beginning of the show, debacle one was letting Dave Rice go, having Mick Cronin tease us, hiring Chris Beard to have him leave a week later to settle for Marvin Menzies to put us in a situation where we are 3 years later. In this situation, and this is where I felt the athletic director Reed failed the UNLV fan base, was all through this, whatever you want to call it, process, Tom, and this is going to date back to before Marvin Menzies even was released. And I feel a lot of it because of the way the media is in this town, and there is media that, give or take, they have suggestive protocol and what they should and shouldn't say about the university, right, Tom? Which, whatever, there's agreements in place, there's contracts. It is what it is. And this is print. This is radio. This is TV. And then you have other media hosts that have no ties to anything, but seem to want to push their opinion on everybody as what it is and what it should be. And you know who I'm talking about. My problem was that regardless of it, whether it was going to be Rick Pitino, Thad Matta, Steve Alford, Larry Eustace, the Miller brothers, right? That was a big one. And then it was Nate Oates' name thrown around. Rhodes out of ECU got his name thrown around. Eric Musselman up north. When Nate Oates took the job at Alabama, Tom, I even heard, hell, why don't we hire Avery Johnson, who just got fired from Alabama? Just all these names being thrown about because they wanted to put a name to this university to turn it around. Right then, if this wasn't the process for the athletic director, Reed, to go about, she should have put a stop to all that at the beginning, Tom. But it generated UNLV's name out in the media, right? Not only here locally, but it went across the country. I understand part of that, but I felt she did a disservice to the fans here because she allowed the charade to go on. And then when she did make her committee and did her coaching search and the names that came about, it has nothing to do with T.J. Otzelberger. But it was a letdown from what it began with in Rick Pitino months and months ago to the finished product. If none of those guys we talked about were ever even considered, and from what I hear, and what's funny is on Twitter, the term sources was being used a lot in the last month. My sources say this, my sources say that. From what I heard, Larry Eustace never got a phone call. Steve Alford never got a phone call. The Miller brothers never got a phone call, Tommy. Maybe Thad Matta, maybe him, was in the mix, even though we all said it wasn't going to happen.
No, he wasn't.
Pitino never got a phone call, right? None of those guys got phone calls. She should have put a stop to it because it just created what we saw here afterwards with the media basically spinning their wheels backwards to try to go and now push T.J. Otzelberger as the guy because they look like fools. And I don't know if this is her inexperience. It doesn't matter to me. She's the AD. She's going to do what she's got to do. Her name's attached to T.J. Otzelberger the rest of the time that she's here. So she has to make that decision. In my mind, though, Tom, I don't believe he was the first choice. I believe he was probably choice three or four. She didn't get who she wanted the first two times around. And it became a situation where she saw maybe a flashback to the previous AD getting stuck in a situation where they didn't have the guy they wanted and running out of time. Maybe she gets lucky here with T.J. Otzelberger, but I think that she went a route here where it could have ended up very badly for her, and I blame her for that because she did not put an end to the rumors when she could have.
You know, I'm going to stick up for her here because I understand where you're saying where she could have ended the rumors, and I agree with that part. But I'm going to say this: I think that she is, other than we're giving her credit for here, I think that she's walked into the room. And I believe that there was some form of this conversation going on. Guys, it was a disaster last time. I want you to give me a list of the five best coaches that we want to go after. Do not put anyone on that list that you're not sure we could get. I think that was the conversation. If there is a doubt if we could get them, do not put them on this list. We will make one hire, and it will stick. Give me that list. I believe, like I said, you know, the whole Thad Matta thing, I called it out when it happened. Ridiculous. Absolutely. Bonkers ridiculous that anybody would ever think that. Okay? Pitino, remember the last search when I told you that was ridiculous? That was ridiculous, the last search. Everybody, well, he likes Vegas. Let me tell you something. Rick Pitino was on New York radio, okay, years ago, and made a mention to if he was going to take another job, okay, and kind of had a little fun with it. Basically, he would go to UCLA and nowhere else. When you know, you hear things like that, Pitino was never in play. Thad Matta was never in play. And if you don't believe that, if you want to still stick to the guns that he could have had, you whatever sources you said sources, whatever sources you have, fire those sources. Okay, fire those sources.
You know the source.
They're wrong.
You know the source, Tommy.
Well, here's the thing. I will tell you. You know, I've spoken to a bunch of beat writers in the last couple of weeks on my show, and we talk a little bit off the air. And one of the beat writers said to me, I don't want to have to give his name. He's a baseball beat writer, okay? But what he said to me was, one of the biggest problems with this industry nowadays, okay, is that because of social media, smaller radio figures, smaller newspaper figures will throw names out so they can claim they are the first ones to do it. If it doesn't happen, it fades away. If it does happen, they get all the press, okay? So it hurts real journalists nowadays because they're chasing stories. And maybe somebody said, oh, I heard from a guy who's friends with a mother who bought a ham sandwich at the deli down the block that said Thad Mott is coming in, okay? And if it happens, listen, if Thad comes, well, great. If it doesn't, it happens. And I've gotten caught into that situation. If you remember at the baseball winter meetings at sportsgarten.com, I announced, I said, listen, I'm hearing that the San Diego Padres are going to do something huge. I use the word huge. What happened? I said, maybe even today. What happened? I came on the air that night. Nothing happened. I got bashed by 50-some-odd Padres fans in the next week. I said, guys, you know, listen, I said, maybe today, but I knew something huge was coming down. It took 3 months, you know. Now, I can't go out and claim that I broke the news because I didn't have a name associated with it. I wasn't doing it for news sake. But again, if I wanted to, I should have just thrown out Machado or Harper to get on top of it first. That's what these quote-unquote journalists are doing, commentary people are doing. They want to get out first so that they hear of something that might sort of happen and get everybody excited. So I believe that she wanted to end that. Yeah, could she have said, guys, we're not going after them? Yeah, maybe. But you get a little free publicity. That's not terrible. I don't think that any one of their names were ever on a board because they could not make this mistake again, Tim. They couldn't make the mistake of hiring somebody that didn't come here. They couldn't make the mistake of, you know, making a formal offer to somebody that turned it down. So you're right. I don't think any of them really got a phone call, but I don't blame her for that. I think she asked people. This was not a one-person situation. She asked the people that she trusted, her basketball people, for lack of a better term, give me a list of people we could certainly get. And guess what? Nate Oates, you are never getting, because Alabama is far superior of a program than you. You don't think basketball-wise? Far superior of a program, okay? There are coaches out there that were just never coming here. Just like the Chris Beard situation, you had to avoid. I don't believe any of those people on the list. Why? Because Pitino was never coming here. Armada was never coming here. Musselman was never coming here. And from what you've told me all along, is Miller was never coming here. Now, Miller, I assumed, was on the radar. I have no inside information. I have no sources to tell me differently. Except for you, who said day one, Miller's not coming here, and he was never called.
You remember that when we heard the rumor from somebody we know. First thing I said to you, said, Tom, he's not coming here. There's no way that's happening.
You bashed it, and I even said to you, I said, Tim, you might look bad here because everybody was convinced he's coming. Everybody. You were the only person to say, absolutely not. He's not coming. He's not coming. You know, from whoever you knew. Saying there's no way, and now you look back and you're telling me he was never called. I believe you. I 100% believe you.
Why would he? He has no head coaching experience.
He was completely unqualified for the job. Unqualified for the job.
Right. I don't mean
he can't do it. Couldn't do a good job. He was completely unqualified for the job.
And you're right. He may. I assume he'll get a shot somewhere. Right now he's on Penny Hardaway's staff at Memphis, cutting his teeth. Just like Penny had to cut his teeth to get a job somewhere. I assume. Yes, the recruiting ties are very, very strong for Mike Miller because he's still relevant enough for people to remember him. And yes, he had a long NBA career, and yes, he won NBA titles. I get all of that. But for a university that is treading water, you don't take a gamble on somebody who hasn't never coached before. That's
and I think that's I'm sorry, not to cut you off, but I think that the word gamble that you just used is perfect with TJ, mm-hmm. because I don't think he's a gamble. I think he is a guy that we look at. It's draft season, right? It's almost draft season.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, what do we say about him? High floor, low ceiling, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't TJ remind you of high floor? I don't think he's going to do, I think that they're sitting there going, hey, he's a safe guy. He's not going to go in here and lose, 20 games. He's not going to do worse than Menzies. You said earlier, maybe catch the lightning in a bottle. I don't think he's ever going to do that either. I think he is one of those guys that has a very low ceiling and a very high floor. He's a safe pick. And right now, you guys don't want to hear it. This university needs a safe pick. You're 100% right. They can't afford to take a shot with Miller. What if Miller was a complete bust?
Yeah.
He was a complete and total bust. How far back would that set this program?
If TJ Otzelberger takes a job at Oregon State in 4 years, he did his job, Tom, right? That he did what he had to do. And that's what Rebel fans have to understand going into this. With that being said, let me ask you a question. Do you believe, as I do, that TJ Otzelberger was not Desiree Francois Reed's first choice as a head coach?
I don't believe it necessarily. I'm not sure. I'm not going to take a hard stance here, Tim. I believe that he was on a short coaching list of safe options that they knew they could get. I don't believe that the players that I named, or the coaches, I'm sorry, that I named, most of them weren't going to be on her list. I don't believe Nate Oates is on the list, because I think when you call an agent and he goes, you're from UNLV, no, we got Alabama on the other line, right? It's just not a situation that's going to happen. I don't believe that most of these guys were on the list. So he might have been her first choice, but it's, let's put it in another analogy. Where we just had our Major League Baseball fantasy draft him, right? You would pick 12. you would have loved to have Mike Trout, but you knew he wasn't coming to you, right?
No.
I mean, it would have been really, really nice to have Nolan Arenado. He wasn't going to fall to you. So that's TJ. I think that he was in that mix of the three or four that she probably wanted that were safe, and we could definitely get these guys. So he may have been at the top of that three or four list, but she chopped so many people off because they just weren't going to get him.
Are you saying TJ Otzelberger is Paul Goldschmidt for me?
You hope so.
Especially with the way he started, right?
Right. But does that make sense?
Absolutely.
In there, and he said, you guys want Pitino? Oh, he might be trouble to get. Okay, what cross him off the list?
Absolutely.
Oh, you guys want Thad Mata? We're not sure if we can get him. Okay, cross him off the list. And the list was probably headed up by TJ, who they knew they could get. Make an offer to a guy we know we can get. He's got some experience. We know he's got a high floor. He's not going to crash and burn. And maybe he's ready to take the next step. Listen, if I'm sitting in there as a business owner, if I'm sitting in that room, I like the things that I just said about the next head coach.
And when I listened to the press conference, I like the things he said. He sold himself well, Tom. He did a good job at selling himself, as a head coach should do when you take a job somewhere, which I felt Marvin Menzies didn't do well. And here's the thing. We all have aspects of sports that we follow. I already said at the beginning of this hour, I didn't follow TJ Otzelberger. I didn't follow South Dakota State. I knew who Mike Dom was. I knew who Marvin Menzies was, though, Tom. I followed the WAC. I followed New Mexico State.
You did not want Menzies here at all.
I was dead set against it. And I still, as much as I disliked the hire, I still went into every season with what I felt was a fair analysis of what we were going to handle. And that first year, I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt because I did feel he got shorted on his recruiting time. But as time went on, it just wasn't a fit for me. Just like this year, right? We're going to go into this year, and I'm going to have my full support behind what he does because that's what you want to do. My whole thing on it is, with the money that was supposedly available, and again, we're going off a source who I don't know if this is true or false, with the money that was available that they had supposedly to hire a new men's basketball coach. And I heard it was north of $2 million a year. TJ Otzelberger got right around, I think he gets 1.1 this year, and it escalates to 1.4 by the back end of the deal. I don't know what the incentives were on the back end of it. I guess it doesn't matter. I'm just talking about the base here. 1-1 to 1-4. Nate Oates, Tommy, $2.5 million a year to become the guy at Alabama. If the Rebels had the money, and here's the thing, you mentioned status of program, that Alabama, the SEC, that you know, that job means so much more than a UNLV job. Unless you want to continue to play this game of every few years hiring somebody, because either they leave and go to get a better job, or they just have to be jettisoned out because they didn't do what they had to do, at some point, don't you have to start paying what the market value is? And if you could go out and say, Nate Oates, I know you have this school looking at you and that school looking at you, I'm going to give you $2.75 million. You make a decision right now if you want to come coach for us. It makes it a lot harder for a guy to turn a job down.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's why I said, when you're talking about, if somebody walked into her office and said, okay, we want Nate Oates, and she called the agent, and the agent very politely is going to say, you guys are not even in the ballpark, you know, then he's not really on the list. You know, Nate Oates was never really on the list because it was paid almost triple what he was going to get paid. So he was never on the list because those initial phone calls get made. Okay, it's just to do their due diligence, right? Go, you could call up Coach K too and see if you could get him from Duke, but the agent's going to laugh at you. You know, there is going to be a conversation before you get to speaking it to the coach of, hey, you know, we're kind of thinking, you know, we have a coaching opening. Yeah, he's got an Alabama offer on the table for like triple what you guys are offering. Okay, well, he was never really on the list.
What do you do then? And I know here in this town, Tom, and you know, with the way you delve into politics as well. See, here the money comes through a system, and you have regents that have to agree on what they want to pay the coach, just like all universities do. There's a lot of political BS that's involved with these people, though, Tom, and unfortunately, that has an effect on, I truly feel, on who they can go out and get. And all these big names were thrown about. Rick Pitino, from day one, we agreed, was never coming here. He sure as hell, Tom, wasn't coming here for $1 million or $2 million. That's a $5 million a year minimum coach, right? And you start chipping your way down. In my belief, unless you find a guy who loves where he's at and you want to give him a piece of the university, which I feel like in Gonzaga's case, that Mark Few probably owns a piece of that university, you're not, you know, those guys are few and far to get to stay somewhere. They're going to have to pay upwards of $2.5, $3 million to keep a guy here that's relevant. That's just the way it has to be.
Or you get somebody, Tim, that understands the outliers. I mean, what do we always say about, well, you know, what do we say about Mike Trout? Well, if he came to New York, he'd get the commercial endorsement. Look, if you could come into Las Vegas as a young coach and you start to see the fringe benefits, okay, you start to see you're getting commercial opportunities, you're getting this, you're getting... And what does every coach want? Besides money, which every coach wants, power. Will the school allow the power structure to be there? Will they give him overriding power? Coach K owns Duke, okay? You know, I mean, he can do whatever he wants. He'll never get second-guessed. I'm not saying you have to give the Coach K kind of power, but that's the kind of power that you mentioned, Mark Few. There are guys that have. I'm a Harvard fan. Tommy Amaker is one of the best coaches in the country. Nobody knows about him. Where is he going? He went to Duke. Why wouldn't he go back and try to get a bigger job? Why wouldn't he leave Harvard in the Ivy League to get a better, bigger job? Well, he's getting paid well, but they also give him carte blanche. You can do whatever you want. You know, the smaller conferences that have coaches for 15, 20 years, that are succeeding for 15 or 20 years, Tim, it's not only about the money if it's coming from a small school. It's about the power. Mm-hmm. Look at what we can do. Look at what we're going to give you. Jay Wright came from Hofstra, okay? I grew up 10 minutes from Hofstra. Jay Wright went to Hofstra. Why did he start at Hofstra and then went to Villanova? Hofstra said, this is your building. They gave him the keys to the castle. Marvin Menzies didn't have the keys to the castle. Dave Rice didn't have the keys to the castle. Lon Kruger didn't have the keys to the castle. They've got to be able to give up that power structure.
And I think you remember, you brought up Tommy Amaker. I think you remember... I want to say it's almost been a decade, but he was going to leave Harvard.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I think Miami made an offer to him as a multi-million dollar. It was well north of $1 million. I know that. And Harvard had to come to the table to make the decision. And he stayed and he's been there since. But, yeah, when you look at what the future is going to hold here, Tom, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, right? That's the X factor. It comes with how this university has slipped so far is that you're hoping now you're basically every season hoping that it works out, or in the back of your mind, you're like, well, I guess in next year, if this doesn't work out, we got to look for another head coach. I think at some point they're going to have to come through with the money and pay somebody with a name to come here.
Tim, with all of this going on, right, everything, we forgot to mention one thing. Let's wrap it up with a bow. What happens to Menzies? Is there any doubt that he's like in the tournament in 2 years with like the UC Riverside or something?
Of course, right? That's
somewhere
what he
else. Go to a smaller school, you know. He'll go recruit well again. I think he gets a head coaching job. I do. I think he lands a head coaching job. Maybe not next year, but he lands another head coaching job, and I think he has some success there.
Barring any type of NCAA violation, right?
Right.
He'll get a job either as an assistant here this upcoming season, or he'll sit it out, and then he'll grab I firmly believe he'll grab a job somewhere on the West Coast at one of the smaller schools.
You know, give the Big West a call, Big Sky. He'll be one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
Montana State.
Yeah, like you said, Cal Poly.
Cal Poly.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Todd Simon's doing one. So
Todd Simon, hot name right now.
Should have been the coach.
Yeah.
I said it at the time. It was a mistake to let him go.
Good luck, TJ. We're rooting for you. We'll see how it goes as the offseason progresses. We'll keep you up to date on any major recruiting signings or potential signings as the season offseason progresses. When we come back in hour three, we're going to touch on a little NBA playoff talk as we're rounding the corner here on the regular season. I'll give you a shade of some hockey talk as well, and then we'll wrap it all up with some Major League Baseball week number one. It's Heatwave Sports. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, back after this.